And good morning to you, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Welcome live out of the Common Workspace Studios. Tipping Point with Zach Yenser on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice. Daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. Happy Monday morning to you, and welcome to our Monday morning news hour on the show, where we talk about the news and stories that came in over the weekend and shaping the week ahead and try to make sense of it all. We often do that with someone writing about the news, watching the news, reading the news out there in our Tucson and Southern Arizona environment. Sometimes it's you and me on the air. And it will be you and me on the air today, 520-790-2040. Joining the conversation at any time. Looking forward to chatting with you. This live local thing we do called radio is the only real-time platform to talk about real issues with real people in real time, and I think that's pretty special. Got some great conversations going on this week. I'll tell you about those a little bit later, but this is our Monday morning news hour. Let's kick things off. As always, Mr. Matt Neely making the magic happen on the other side of the glass. Matt, hope you had a great weekend. Happy Monday to you.
Happy Monday to you, Zach. Had a wonderful weekend and ready to roll here on this wonderful work week.
Yes, sir. The second week of the new year.
And already.
Our first full week. We had Monday off, which was nice last week, but this is our first 5-day week, but I believe in us, so we'll make it happen.
Okay. I appreciate the vote of confidence there, Zach.
It was more for me than for you, Matt, but again, well, let me just jump in. Some great conversations coming up this week. We have Supervisor Matt Hines on the show tomorrow. And then his best buddy on the County Board of Supervisors, Steve Christie, is on Wednesday. So that's a 24 hours apart conversation. And some of their disagreements have been front and center in the local media the last few days. And on accident, we'll have those conversations 24 hours apart. And then, Matt, I've been looking forward to this conversation. President Bobby Robbins is going to be with us on Friday, and I made what I think is a risky decision, but I made it purposefully. I know classes started today. I know there's a lot of COVID to talk about. I'm not talking with President Robbins about COVID or classes. I am talking with President Bobby Robbins, University of Arizona president, about one thing, and that is Tucson's place in space. That's it. You heard it here first. You'll hear it on Friday. We're going to talk two segments about the U of A and Tucson's place as a space capital of the Southwest, space capital of the nation, space capital of the world. And if you think I'm being exaggerative or that's hyperbolic, tune in on Friday. This is something we got to lean in on. So that and many more really great conversations the rest of the week. So I'm looking forward to that. Today on the show, I want to finish off this first segment. It's our warm-up segment. I want to talk about NFL craziness. Now, if you're not a football fan, I'm going to try to make this enjoyable, so don't worry. Don't tune me out. But every now and again, I will put my toe in the water of sports news, and this is that time. The State of the State is later today. Governor Ducey's last State of the State. I want to give you my thoughts and some predictions on what we'll say. On what he'll say. And then I want to talk about COVID. I want to talk about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez showing up as positive for COVID in the media this weekend. And that's not what I want to focus on. I want to focus on the missing COVID message. And I think it'll tie into my conversations tomorrow and Wednesday with Supervisors Hines and Christie. So that's at least a little bit of what's on the show today. And of course, we'll take your phone calls in and around that. So first and foremost, Matt, of course, our Arizona Cardinals are in the playoffs, bumbling and stumbling in. I think losing their last, five of the last six, Matt. But they are in the playoffs. And I think they play the Dallas Cowboys next week, which is good because that was the one of the only games we've won in the last few weeks, and it'll be a rematch. So that's good. Well, first time in a while the Cardinals have been in the playoffs, so that'll be fun.
That'll be good. A little disappointing the last 5 weeks have included four losses, I think, but they've managed to wander into the playoffs, so good for them.
Right. The benefits of starting, what was it, 7-0, 8-0?
Right.
8-1, 9-1. I mean, the first 10 games were solid, and then after that, it's been a little little bumbly. So this is a fun topic. This will kick us off something a little bit lighter. But yesterday was the first week 18 in NFL history. So there's usually been 17 weeks, 16 games, a bye week for every team somewhere in the season. This is the first week 18, so it's an expansion of the season. And I was telling Matt, I think I watched some of the best football I have watched in years, if not ever, yesterday. I think the big story comes in as Big Ben, the quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers. I've got some Steelers fans listening, I know, so I'm talking to you right now. Is set to retire. I think, Matt, it's been 18 years. When I think about my football watching life, he's been around for most of it. An 18-year career. You can clearly see he's lost a step. But the Steelers did just enough to get into the playoffs. So here's how it had to work yesterday. They were playing their rival, the Ravens, in this first week 18 for the first time. They needed, Matt, they needed the Colts to lose to Jacksonville. Now, Jacksonville has won two games this season. And so the Colts last week had to win their last two games, and their last game was yesterday against the Jacksonville Jaguars. They win, and they're in. The Steelers are out. This is the swan song for Big Ben. The Colts get absolutely blown out, as luck would have it, to the Jacksonville Jaguars, who
have
three wins on the season, which means that the Steelers had to win to have a chance to be in the playoffs. So they go to overtime. It's this rainy, snowy, slushy day in Baltimore. They go into overtime and they beat the Ravens. Now, the part three of this, so they had to have the Colts lose. The Pittsburgh Steelers had to win their game. It was a tight game in overtime. And they needed the nightcap game. They needed Los Angeles Chargers and the Las Vegas Raiders to just not tie. So I'm coming to the punchline. They needed those teams, one of those teams to win. Didn't matter who it was, they needed one of those teams to win. So I was watching this game last night, and the last series of the game, right? The Chargers, they have four or five fourth downs they convert on this final drive, Matt, with just barely seconds to go. Punch it across the goal line. They tie up the Raiders to go into overtime. So Matt, I almost had a heart attack for the Steelers because I want Big Ben to have one last shot at the playoffs. So I watch this heart-beating overtime game. Then I get to the nightcap, and all the Steelers need is for one of these teams to win. This game goes into overtime. It's a 10-minute overtime. The Raiders score, then the Chargers score. And Matt, I kid you not, with like 4 minutes to go, it's tied 32-32. Now, here's the kicker, right? Neither team, both teams could just run out the clock and both gone to the playoffs. This is the last piece of the puzzle. If it was a tie, both the Raiders and the Chargers go to the playoffs. They just had a tie, and then the Steelers are out.
Amazing.
Final drive. The Raiders are driving down. The Chargers call this weird timeout with 38 seconds to go. The Raiders make one more first down with 4 seconds or so to go. They kick the winning field goal. So it took until the last 4 seconds of the overtime of the last game of the regular season for the Steelers and Big Ben to make the playoffs. If the Raiders and Chargers had just run out the clock, they both would have gone to the playoffs.
That is amazing.
Just an insane day of football. And I mean, if you're a football fan, that's what we live for, right? It's the end of the season. It's win and in, make or break. This is the last. But now the Steelers will go play the Kansas City Chiefs next week. It should be a really good game. But I could not believe that Charger Raider game was one of the best I've ever seen. And just a fun day. But craziness. First week 18, the season had to end that way. Just absolutely insane. Okay. Matt, my goal was to make that fun for the non-football fans listening and to make sure that they listen to the end. So that was my fun weekend story. No more sports the rest of the hour. We're going to go to our first break.
Because you know, it's not a sports show.
It's not a sports show. I only dip my toe in the sports, in the sports ball, every now and again. But yesterday was just one of the craziest NFL days I've ever seen in my life. Some of the best football I've ever seen. And some of the weirdest final moments to end some of the weirdest kind of combination of occurrences that could happen. If you were a football fan, I think you enjoyed that. If you weren't, my apologies to you. We're going to go to our first break of the hour. When I come back, the governor of Arizona, Doug Ducey, gives his last State of the State. That's today. I think it's at 2, but it's after we get out of studio. So I'm going to give you my predictions and a couple of interesting factoids, what I think will be discussed and what I think it means for the governor when he leaves office. We'll be right back right after this on Tipping Point, AM 1030, KVOI The Voice.
Listen to the live stream and find podcasts of your favorite shows at KVOI.com.
In 2021, FC Tucson was just getting started. We're building something special that all of Tucson can be proud of. Don't miss FC Tucson in action in 2022. Secure your season tickets now at fctucson.com or call 520-600-3095 and download the FC Tucson app in the App Store or Google Play to get updates on MLS preseason as FC Tucson welcomes the biggest teams in U.S. soccer in January and February.
Tucson, your Tucson Museum of Art is pleased to present the Patrick Martinez Look What You Created exhibition. In his first solo museum exhibition in the American Southwest, Los Angeles-based artist Patrick Martinez explores sites of personal, civic, and cultural loss sustained over recent years in America. Opening just this month through April 24th, you can go see it in the Kasser Family Wing of Latin American Art. TucsonMuseumOfArt.org to get your tickets now.
The economy is moving forward, and Arizona businesses are looking at new opportunities and challenges as we emerge from COVID-19. Leading companies are planning how to respond to new business and rebuild their teams and are looking for critical talent now. The right talent in key positions will make all the difference, and having a trusted and dedicated talent acquisition partner will give you an edge. Devin and her team at Talent Store will connect you with top talent while positively impacting time to hire, retention, and your employer brand. Learn more by visiting yourtalentstore.com and scheduling time with Devin and her team.
Helping you make better money decisions is what the Ramsey Show is all about. Today at 1 p.m. on 1030 The Voice.
And we're back to Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Good morning to you. Happy Monday, the second week of 2022. You're listening to Tipping Point on AM 1030 KVUI The Voice. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. Just finished a rare, although Matt is giving me a hard time that it's not so rare anymore, a rare dipping of my toe in the sports waters. This is not a sports show, and very rarely we'll talk sports, but it was my warm-up topic, a crazy day of football yesterday. But to more important matters, today is Governor Doug Ducey's last day of the state. This is our Monday morning news hour, so we're talking about the news and issues of the day coming out of the weekend, into the week ahead, and what it all means. State of the State is later this afternoon. Matt, I found this factoid to be really interesting. We haven't had a governor give a State of the State for the 8th time since Bruce Babbitt, who was governor of Arizona from 78 to 87. We have not had a full 2-term governor since Bruce Babbitt finished up his 2 terms in the late 80s. That's a crazy statistic.
That's something. And Babbitt himself, he may have had 2 full terms. I just don't know what the term limit laws were back then. But of course, he was appointed in, and he was appointed in because the Secretary of State at the time had not been elected. So they had to, Wes Boland, who was an elected Secretary of State, was came into office after Castro left, and then Wes Boland died shortly thereafter, and then Bruce Babbitt was in as AG because he was not elected. But that's an interesting statistic, Zach.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't realize it either, but when you start thinking back, I'm not going to go through the whole timeline, but you think about Napolitano, you think about Brewer, you think about, you know, the number of governors before Ducey. They were appointed, they came in midterm. This is the first time we've had an 8-year, two-term, full-term governor in a really long time. And I had no history. I had no knowledge of the history that you just mentioned, Matt, but I appreciate that because this is interesting. And I bring it up because this is the year, this is the time where certainly the governor, but a lot of us are thinking about what is the legacy of Governor Doug Ducey. And I've had some policy, you know, disagreements. I've had some thoughts of, you know, if I was in the seat, what would I do differently? We all have those thoughts, and I get the liberty to kind of share those behind a mic. But what I have said, and I stick by it, and I'll stand by it, is I think one of the legacy points, right, outside of COVID, outside of political policy differences, I think one legacy of Governor Doug Ducey over his 8 years is I think he will be looked back on as a transformational governor in the future of Arizona's economy. And I don't just mean, you know, budget dollars, cents. I mean, you know, pre-Governor Ducey, I would say in a large way, Arizona was a Sunbelt state driven by homes being built and people moving in. That was the economic strategy of Arizona. And I don't know how you look at the last 8 years and say that Governor Ducey was not a part or did not create a new trajectory for this state. I feel like that is the most bipartisan, most agreed upon legacy of this governor is he took Arizona and moved it into the 21st century. Again, I want to say, like, don't hear that as fanboyishness. I've had my disagreements. I've had my philosophical disagreements. I've had my policy disagreements. But objectively, the governor has a transformational two terms in shifting the direction of this state. So like a lot of you, I'm thinking about legacy. I'm thinking about what did this governor mean to the state of Arizona. Here's what I think you're going to see in the state of the state later this afternoon. Here in Arizona, I think big and broad, you are going to hear a dominant focus on water, water security, water supply, collaboration around water. I'm not making this up, but from what I've heard, what I'm reading in the news, kind of the railbirds I'm connected to up there at the Capitol, I think this is going to be the signature focus of the state of the state. This is going to be the signature focus of Governor Ducey's 2022 year in office. I think that water is going to be something that he wants to lean on as a legacy item. More than anything politically or legacy or personally wise, this is certainly one of the top three issues in this state that have to be tackled. It's a worthy item. I think you're going to see water be a dominant focus. I certainly hope that housing is a topic that at least slips into state of the state. I think that housing had an opportunity not that long ago to be the dominant focus. I believe this administration went with water. That's going to be the big, hairy, audacious goal of 2022 is a bipartisan, multi-sector, collaborative, future-forward strategy on water security and water supply. But I think for a while, I really do, it was neck and neck with housing. And I hope and I think that housing will slip in there as I think there's some bipartisan work at a statewide level to try and solve the housing crisis that we have. Now, I think that the last three things I'm going to mention, and this is not an all-conclusive list. I think these are the things that are going to be in there, could be others. But my personal opinion, and he's not going to talk about it, he won't talk about it. I could ask him for days in a variety of different ways. He would never say, nor should he. That's his prerogative. I think Governor Doug Ducey is angling for a presidential ticket. Either he's going to try to be the guy or he's angling for a VP spot. And if I had to look at some different moves and some different decisions, I almost wonder if former Vice President Mike Pence is going to run. And if he gets it, I think, you know, Governor Doug Ducey's in his top five first calls. Because of that, I think that there are some national issues that the governor is going to try to speak to and localize. I would not be surprised if he addresses election security. And I'm air quoting that because that's the terminology for it these days. But I would not be surprised to see that make it in to the state of the state. It's going to be something that his party is certainly going to be working on, and the minority party is going to be pushing back on this year. The results of 2020 are not in the books, closed, done with in the eyes of the governing party of this legislature. So I would imagine elections show up. I think the border shows up in a big way. And again, that's no Nostradamus, Zach. I think that's obvious. Governor Ducey has been speaking on national, you know, airwaves about his concerns around the border, and he's made this a signature element of his last year and a half as governor. And I think he's going to speak to it. He's going to speak to what Arizona is going to do, and I think he's going to fit in concerns with the Biden administration. And lastly, I think he's going to speak to COVID. And we've seen that previewed the last few days when he went on, I believe it was Fox News, to talk about how Arizona is not going to shut down schools. And prior to that, within the last couple of weeks, he's put out there basically school choice dollars, basically saying, look, if schools shut down, we're going to take, we're going to allow parents to take dollars and move to schools that they choose that are open, is the basic idea. So I think all of these things piece together to be a good prediction for what we're going to see in this state of the state. Water as a focus. I hope housing shows up. It should show up. I think that's the could be, couldn't be in the state of the state. Election security, in the words of the governing party, COVID and the border. I think these are going to be themes that show up. But I would say that I would rule out. I don't think Governor Ducey is running for Senate. He probably could, but that's a race that needs to heat up ASAP right now for him. I haven't seen that be an interest. I don't see that being in the cards. I could be horrifically wrong. But Governor Doug Ducey is 58 years old. In politics, he's got many decades left to go. And I think more than that, he's looking at a potential presidential bid. And so there's a real focus on legacy. I think there's a real focus for Governor Doug Ducey on looking at the last 7 years and change and saying, how do I message what I've done and what has mattered on the national stage? I think that's going to show up in the state of the state. And I also think there's going to be some hints in there of some national issues, some national trends, some national items that I think he's going to feel the need to address to be a part of whatever comes down the road for Governor Doug Ducey. So there's my prediction, state of the state. If you think I missed something, or you think that there should be something in that list that wasn't mentioned, or you think there's something that the governor should address, I'd love to take your calls, 520-790-2040. Otherwise, on the other side, I want to talk some COVID. I'm tired of talking about it, but there is a shift that needs to happen. There is a missing message on COVID. I'm going to tell you what I think it is based on some news this weekend. Of course, you can let me know what you think. That and more on the other side. Tipping Point returns for this Monday morning news hour on AM 1030. KVOI The Voice. Don't go anywhere. Tucson, your Tucson Museum of Art is pleased to present the Patrick Martinez Look What You Created exhibition, and his first solo museum exhibition in the American Southwest. Los Angeles-based artist Patrick Martinez explores sites of personal, civic, and cultural loss sustained over recent years in America. Opening just this month through April 24th, you can go see it in the Kasser Family Wing of Latin American Art. TucsonMuseumOfArt.org to get your tickets now.
In 2021, FC Tucson was just getting started. We're building something special that all of Tucson can be proud of. Don't miss FC Tucson in action in 2022. Secure your season tickets now at fctucson.com or call 520-600-3095 and download the FC Tucson app in the App Store or Google Play to get updates on MLS preseason as FC Tucson welcomes the biggest teams in U.S. soccer in January and February.
Life isn't about money, But how you handle money impacts everything. The Ramsey Show, today at 1 on 1030 The Voice.
And we're back, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Good morning to you live out of the Common Workspace Studios, Tipping Point, with Zach Yenser on AM 1030 KVOI, The Voice, daily in-depth news, conversation, and talk about the people, ideas, and issues shaping Tucson's future. I'm your host, Zach Yenser. This segment is sponsored by Little Love Burger. They opened downtown, just a few doors down from the Rialto Theater last October, and they are Zoom and Little Love Burger, serving up the juiciest burgers, loaded hot dogs, hub ice cream, milkshakes, local brews, and breakfast sandwiches. Follow them on social media at Little Love Burger for their most current hours, their location, and find a time to go and visit them. This is your opportunity to support some great local men and women who are running local small businesses. Really important that we do that. And we love the opportunity here on this program to support and spotlight those small businesses making the dream happen here in Tucson and Southern Arizona. Matt, before we go on to the COVID topic, a topic I'd be more than happy to let go of, but that is not in the cards anytime soon, apparently. You did some digging on a statistic we mentioned in the last segment as Governor Doug Ducey prepares for his 8th state of the state later today. He is the first governor since Bruce Babbitt to give a state of the state for the 8th time. Bruce Babbitt ended in 1987, his administration. Since then, we have not had a full two-term governorship. So we mentioned that in the last segment, but you did some digging that I thought was interesting, if you have that handy.
Well, sure. I mean, you know, you think about there were two early departures, right, in Ev Meekum and Fife Symington. And I think that's about when term limits came in. Rose Mofford was in between. So she, like Jan Brewer, she could not run. She ran for one full term, but she couldn't run for two full terms because she covered the last year of Napolitano's term, right? So, and then the same thing happened between Hall, right, and Symington, and between Mofford and Meekum. Interesting statistic, Zach.
Yeah, no, for sure. I just hadn't realized that, and you were doing some digging over the break. I thought, oh, that's interesting. And 1987. So some history.
Yeah.
Some history being made today.
And Babbitt actually did run for two full terms, even though he covered the last about 8 or 9 months of what was actually Castro's term. But Wes Boland had stepped in when Castro resigned to become ambassador. But I guess that was before term limits, right? So Babbitt was then able to run for two full terms after that. And he could have run for another, it said he could have run for another term in 86 had he chosen to.
Interesting. Was that when he made a run for president it was a, I think a short term.
That was 92 maybe? Gosh,
was it?
That's going a ways back, but I know he did it. He put his hat in the ring for governor at some point, president at some point.
Mm-hmm. Man, between you and I, Matt, mostly you, we are a cornucopia of random gubernatorial factoids in Arizona.
With me, it's emphasis on the word random, and maybe right.
We are sure to be the most popular people at the next party we're at, Matt.
There you go.
Makes for great radio. Other than these seats, nobody
can. Station rules say we can't travel. We can't be in the same place at the same time. It's a station thing.
Oh, but there we have it. There we go. This is our Monday morning news hour. We're trying to make it as easy as possible to slide into your week, talking about the news and issues of the day. I wanted to talk about COVID and what I think is the missing COVID message. You know, I've, for the last couple of years now, sadly, we have to say that it's been almost 2 years. In March, it'll be 2 years officially that we've been dealing with this thing stateside and in Arizona. But I have, I think, largely focused over the time that we've talked about COVID on the what comes next component, that we have to be constantly thinking about what is the next stage of this? What is the next public policy? Not just health policy, but what's the next public policy stage of this? Understanding that this was always going to be a 3 to 3.5 year cycle, as these kind of pandemics usually run. This idea that we couldn't do even the first few months as a response, we couldn't do that month after month, year after year. And so my head's kind of been in there. There was an interesting piece of news of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, a famous member of the squad, a very left of center representative, tested positive for COVID and is currently maneuvering through those symptoms. Of course, this connects back to the pictures that came out over the holiday break of AOC being in Miami. And, you know, we've heard sleepless in Seattle. This was maskless in Miami. And I just had to fit that in because I'm a huge fan of alliteration. My point is is not about this individual person and her individual case. In fact, that is the point of this segment. What I wanted to share is who cares? And I think that this is the real tune that both parties are missing. And I was thinking to myself that there is an opening here, right? By the way, Savannah Guthrie is positive. We wish her well. Multiple late night hosts are positive. We know that Elizabeth Warren just got over COVID. Cory Booker just got over COVID. And these are just the headliners. And I think both parties, both sides of the political spectrum on this issue are missing an opportunity on the heels of these high-profile COVID occurrences to say, who cares? We are past the point, we should be past the point of high-level infections, of infection period being the headliner. Who cares? I have friends who luckily have not gotten COVID the last 2 years and are saying, I'm surely going to get it this time. And I don't want to be cold, but I want to say, yeah, the odds are not in your favor. The odds for people who are even double boosted or double vaccinated and boosted and wearing masks, the reality of a less severe, high spreading variant of COVID means that even if you've done all the right things and continue to do all the right things, it is very likely to no one's fault, healthcare, friends, business, government, to no one's fault, that you are going to get COVID. And I really hope you don't. And it's good news if you have felt like the vaccine is the best thing for you and you're following, I think, some of the basic mitigation things that do work even as a gauze. Right, I think that we didn't talk about masks and the vaccines and the reality that they are, that this is like gauze. There's a lot that's going to get through, but it's going to keep a lot out, and it's also going to make the impacts much, much less. But the fact of the matter is that as this goes on, the more we obsess over infection, the less able we will be to really fully move forward with this thing and move out of it. So I think if you are a Republican and you read that AOC is positive or Elizabeth Warren is positive for COVID, be the adult in the room and say, who cares? We're dealing with Omicron. I think a huge majority of people, vax and unvax, are going to get this thing. Our focus is less on infection rate and more on social institutions. How do we manage to keep our hospitals from being overburdened? How do we make sure that our flights can still happen and our schools can stay open? That's the focus. And more importantly, if you are a Democrat, because this breaks down on party lines, we all know that if you are a Democrat, this should be the same message. Who cares? Yeah, I mean, this makes you know, fun clickable media, but who cares? This is real life. This is going to get a ton of people this season. We know that thankfully it is high spread but low impact. we're probably all going to get it. And our focus should be less on this infection or that infection, or saying if you got infected, you must have done something wrong, and saying that's how a virus works. And here we are. And the point should now be, how do we keep our institutions running? How do we manage our way through this? I mentioned a New York Times piece last week from a doctor. A COVID piece that caught my eye was by one of my favorite writers in the entire world, Peggy Noonan. She happens to write for the Wall Street Journal. Again, I read a wide variety of sources from a wide variety of political leanings, but Peggy Noonan is one of my favorite, one of my favorites. The president in 2022 during his campaign said, "I'm going to shut down the virus, not the country. I'm going to shut down the virus, not the country." I'm not sure about the shutdown of the virus part, but the data doesn't show it's heading in that direction, but not the country. Peggy Noonan writes, "This may be the time to stop picking at the scab that is the vaccination wars." This is quoting her piece. "At a certain point, you cannot patronize and scold people into changing their minds. Persuade, but don't bark and accuse. From the beginning, the government should have sent pro and anti-vaxxers out all over to debate each other." This is Peggy Noonan writing for the Wall Street Journal. "The pro-vaccine argument would have won. I still don't understand why humor and warmth were never used in government vaccination campaigns, only bland and incessant hectoring from doctors in white jackets telling you it's safe, it's right, do it, which came across as mere and heavily subsidized propaganda. The president often sounds to me like a man trying to perceive what the public wants and deliver it, which in fairness is what most politicians do. But he and his people are not necessarily good perceivers. On the pandemic, he isn't sure if they want reassurance or an acting out of shared indignation or a stirring Churchillian vow. Quote, I'm going to shut down the virus, not the country, he said during the 2020 campaign. And I've been saying this on the show for a number of weeks now. The fact that AOC makes news for being maskless outdoors and getting COVID shows that Republicans and Democrats are still obsessed with infection. And I think the party, I think the leaders, I think the people that move past that narrative the best will ultimately be most successful, whether success is electoral success or community success. Because the fact that you can be double vaccinated and boosted and wear a mask and still get COVID doesn't disprove the efficacy of the vaccine, but also means that the incessant insistence that is the only way out of this thing is also wrong. And I'm just going to be the guy down the middle that says you both are wrong. The vaccine is effective, but it's not the only message we should be sharing. Peggy Noonan mentioned that the president in his address last week mentions, if you need to go get a test, you can have it. False. She mentioned going on Google, like the president mentioned, to go find a test. And now tests are, mind you, by appointment now, and that the next available appointment to get tested in her most local area is 7 days out. Which, by the way, if you think you have the Omicron variant, in 7 days or less, you'll be fine. Most of the time. And certainly if you're vaccinated. And so Peggy's going, wait a second. We are 20 months into this thing, and we have still not made a part of our calculus the ease and availability of testing, different masking, some of the antiviral medicines, some of these other things. Now, I just want to say for the record, right, because I have hundreds of hours a year on the record, I am fully vaccinated. I wear a mask during surge times, and I test weekly, right? So this does not come in any way from any denialism. But we have to bridge a whole lot better the science and the white coat. My mom is a nurse. I value and honor the white coat. But we have to bridge that and public policy. And we are doing a horrific job of it. And the fact that we are in the same place public policy-wise 20 months into this thing is not a good look. It means we have not done the job. Because I think we are still at a point where we are leaning on one mitigation technique and not realizing that the point now is not to mitigate infection. The point is to mitigate our institutions and social burden. So I thought that was interesting. If you listened to my Tuesday show last week, a doctor in the New York Times mentioned the same thing. Peggy Noonan, an opinion columnist for the Wall Street Journal, mentioned the same. Both parties, wherever you line up on this COVID thing, should both be looking at AOC getting infected and say, who cares? This is no longer the storyline. This is no longer the point. There was on the local news, there was an interesting article, an interesting piece where they look at who goes into the hospital and who it is said has COVID. And I've fact-checked this across different news media, right and left, and I've heard the same thing. So I think there's some validity to it. Basically, what is happening is that if you go in for a broken arm, they are testing you for COVID as well, which is fine, and there's no issues with that. They are then saying, oh, this patient has COVID, and are then giving those COVID numbers to health organizations. Doctors are now saying, right, and I'm not talking the fringy YouTube junk news stuff. I'm talking real life doctors who are in real life health institutions following the Hippocratic Oath are saying a lot of our COVID patients, I'm sending them home. Sure, we're seeing more infections. We're seeing people come in for a heart complication, and they happen to be positive for COVID, but that's not why they're there. And a whole lot of people coming in for COVID, I'm sending them home because they can care for themselves at home. And that's good news. 66% of Americans have at least one shot of the vaccine. So I think it's time that we make more complex and less simplistic our understanding of what the role of infection in our public policy and what infection actually means. Now, this is boring radio if you're into this for politics. If you like to take shots across the bow at the other side, this is probably boring. But let me tell you, public policy is supposed to be. It's supposed to be complex. It's supposed to be complicated. It's supposed to be nuanced. It's supposed to be intricate. And for 20 months, we have mangled the messaging, we have mangled the public policy, we've mangled the politics. And I think we've got to shift. And whoever shifts best and fastest on this is going to be more successful electorally and more successful in their communities. This is a great piece by Peggy Noonan, The Endless Loop of COVID-19. If you can find it, it's a really interesting piece. 20 months in, we're in the same place we were 20 months ago. That means we're not successful, and what we're doing today does not work. We'll be right back after a short break. Tipping Point on AM 1030 KVY, The Voice. I want to end on a high note. I try to do that on these Monday morning news hours. Some good news to close out the week. That and more on the other side as we wrap up this Monday morning news hour. We'll be right back.
The next generation of talk. Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, 1030, The Voice.
Zach Yenser here. I'm so excited to be a part of the launch of the Little Love Burger this fall here in Tucson. Located just two doors down from the Rialto Theater, Little Love Burger serves up the juiciest scratch-made hamburgers, loaded hot dogs, hub ice cream milkshakes, lovable local brews, and the most addictive breakfast sandwiches. Starting October 20th, Little Love Burger is open Sunday to Wednesday, 8 a.m. to 9 p.m., and Thursday to Saturday, 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook. Tucson, don't you want some burger to love? Why I Love Where I Live. It's a brand and movement that began here in Tucson to spark gratitude and celebrate the good things about where we live. Located in the open-air Mercado San Agustin Annex just west of downtown, it's a great place to shop or spend time with friends as you enjoy food, drink, and other shopping options close by. Find gifts, toys, books, and clothes that will help you celebrate where you live. Visit them at the Annex off the I-10 at Cushing and Avenida del Convento.
After you finish listening to The Tipping Point, listen to my show, The Hugh Hewitt Show, this morning from 10 to noon, right here on 1030 KBOI, The Voice.
And we're We're back, Tucson and all of Southern Arizona. Good morning to you. It's our Monday morning news hour here on Tipping Point with Zach Yenser, live out of the Common Workspace Studios, where we try to slide into the week, making sense of the news, issues, people, and ideas over the weekend and shaping the week ahead. We talked about some NFL craziness for you football fans out there. First time there's a week 18, 17 games, longer season. The drama could not have been higher, and it was our warm up. I tipped my toe into sports, and I rarely do that. But Matt is giving me a hard time because I can't really say that anymore because it's becoming less rare. In another life, I'll admit it. I've admitted it. In another life, I probably would have been a sportscaster on the radio of some kind. It's my little itch that needs scratched every now and again. State of the state, Governor Ducey's eighth and last state of the state is later today. We gave our thoughts and predictions. We haven't had a governor give a State of the State for the eighth time since Bruce Babbitt, who ended in 87. It's been a long time since we had a full two-term governor in this state, and that's an interesting factoid. And then we talked about what I think is going to be in that state of the state. We also talked about the news of the weekend that AOC, after a holiday in Miami, came back positive for COVID. And my message, you should listen back to it because I'm going to give you the cliff notes. My message was both parties should be saying, who cares? The fact that we are still obsessing over infection is showing that we are not thinking about the public policy of this thing moving forward in the right, most effective way. And so listen back to that last segment. Words are hard on a Monday. Listen back to that last segment on the podcast when it's up in a couple of hours. I'm curious to get your thoughts. The media focus shows that we are still focusing on infections and not yet managing the impact on our social institutions, and that's where our focus should be going forward. I wanted to end the show on a high note and also use it as a forecast of how this week is going to end on the program. I was excited by a Kagan 9 piece in the news today, or January 7th rather, so late last week. University of Arizona leads the nation in astronomy and astrophysics research spending. The university spent $122 million on this research in FY 2020. And it starts by saying many call Tucson the astronomy capital of the world, and for good reason. And I pick out these articles. I'm attuned to it because I have been pushing the brand Space Capital of the Southwest, Space City of the Southwest. And the University of Arizona has started to do the same. And my message has been that it is now time for our community to lean in on that brand, Space City of the Southwest. And again, to me, this ties Raytheon together, Worldview together, U of A Research together, the craft that went to Bennu, the asteroid, the space telescope that was just launched, Davis-Monthan as an Air Force installment, the fact that we have a state National Guard base here that is Air Force driven. We are a space capital of the Southwest, if not the nation, if not the world. And the only people not talking about it are us, the broad us. I've seen more come out in the news on this. That is good news. But I often feel that beyond national sources, little old me, and I really mean that, little old me, on this drive time show every Monday morning is the guy saying, hey, this is pretty cool. I don't want to be that guy, right? I should be following other news publications on that locally. I should not be the only one that I see on the data that happens mentioning, hey, this is cool. And my point isn't to dig at anyone. My point is to say, as a community, public sector, private sector, academia, the fourth estate, we all need to be pulling on this rope of saying, we are dang good at this. We need to be investing branding, resources, startups, dollars. This needs to be our focus for the next 5 or 10 years. And super excited about seeing this start to happen. But it literally needs every sector to pull in the same direction with the same message. So to start driving that home in my little old way, I am really excited to have President Bobby Robbins, the president of the university, on my show on Friday. And look, I'm taking a risk. You can hate me for it. It's okay. This is the first week of U of A classes. We have thousands of people coming from around the world to a campus that is mandating in-person classes. I get it. There's a lot we could talk about that is newsy, in air quotes. I went a different direction. In the 30 minutes I have with President Robbins, we're going to talk one thing and one thing only, Tucson's place in space. We're going to talk about the U of A investment. We're going to talk about the future of this community. We're going to talk about the opportunities that we have in space, because somehow we have to start crafting a message that we share across this community, saying that space exploration and space technology is the flag that we are planting. You find what you're good at, where the momentum is going, and you go there. This is it. This is where the puck is going. And I'm going to keep making the case. And I'm just so excited that President Bobby Robbins is coming on to talk about that $122 million in FY 2020 solely to lead the nation in astronomy and astrophysics research spending. Many call Tucson the astronomy capital of the world. We don't call Tucson. You and I don't call Tucson the astronomy capital of the world. Everybody else does. We don't. And we should be. So that's how we're going. That's going to be our end cap. That's going to be our last conversation of the week. Hugh Hewitt's coming up next. That does it for us today. Bill Buckmaster at noon. Check us out on the podcast. You can find us on kvy.com, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play Music. Shoot me an email, zyenser@gmail.com. Tomorrow, Supervisor Matt Hines, Pima County Board of Supervisors, as my guest. Should be an interesting conversation. Tucson, stay safe out there. Take care. And we'll see you tomorrow.